Welcome to Creative Disturbance. Today, Brian Burnham is a PhD student at Manchester. He can tell you more about what he does, but the reason we're talking to Brian today in the Creative Disturbances is that he's got a master's degree from the Department of Geosciences at University of Texas at Dallas, and at the same time was also a student in the Arts and Technology program at the same university. So Brian brings a perspective of both the scientist using big data as well as the arts and technology people and design people. So Brian, we've talked about the importance of big data in visualization, and maybe tell us what you're doing now and just start talking about your perspective on it.
Thanks, Susan. So since my background is kind of in big data visualization, I've been using LIDAR, which is just light detection and ranging, which is just shooting a bunch of lasers at rocks. And I've been using this data to create kind of photorealistic, fully three-dimensional geologic models. And I've been using it to teach people in the classroom. So when you take undergraduates out into the field, you can show them kind of some structural geology or something, and then you take them to the field and show them what they'd just seen a week prior in the classroom. And acquiring all this data to build the models, it requires a lot of computing power, and it's also a very, very large and dense data set. So some of the data sets I've collected are 30 gigabytes in data, and I mean, I'm talking about 15 million data points on it, which is an incredible amount. So kind of the background that I took and the route that I took at UT Dallas up to my master's was kind of collating all this data together and trying to see if I can't visualize it more effectively and efficiently. And I was able to do that by combining it with some kind of airborne 3D data sets at the lower resolution. But I was able to kind of combine that together for my master's. And then the PhD that I'm doing now has a bit more of an industrial application to the oil and gas industry, but I still run into the same problem of I have a 17 million data point point cloud data set, and I'm really struggling to try to visualize it. So part of my PhD is to better manage and handle those large data sets.
So, Brian, one thing that I was interested in being a novice in visualization is when I go to the movies and there's these enormous transformers and all this data, and especially Interstellar, they had a black hole. But do all the movie houses struggle with this, with the data, when they do all this animation and visualizing new things?
They do. This is kind of a key problem that exists both in the science world and in kind of the visualization world in media. And so if you think about the movie Interstellar, like you suggested, that black hole visualization is the first time that real data that was collected from an astrophysicist named Kip Thorne and was given to the animators to visualize, it was the first time it's ever been visualized. And the amount of data that they had to process was incredible and massive. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't know the details of it, of the production, but I'm sure it took them many days and many cores to process all of this data. And I think it's an important issue that both visualization artists and scientists who work with data like this, we need to really communicate more because we can start to produce visualizations like they did in Interstellar. But I think that there's a fine line that we have to dance along that we can't let the visualization artists go too crazy with our data because we have what we want to get out of it, but they may not see it that way. They may see the RGB channels of it, but we want to see the different bits of information we can pull out of it. So I think it's a fine line that we're dancing along, but I think it's important that Interstellar especially made kind of this big leap forward in using real scientific data to produce visualizations in the cinematic world, and they're starting to kind of build those relationships, which I think should happen in the future.
Well, I know a lot of geologists that I talk to about this, we are concerned with people taking data, making something beautiful out of it from the design or artistic sense, but losing the scientific accuracy to help people understand concepts.
Right, yeah. I have personally seen kind of computer vision scientists that are trying to come up with new algorithms and new ways of kind of visualizing vast amounts of data. And these guys they solely work in kind of like binary fashion. They think very binary. I think those computer vision guys are making headway and making big steps in new ways to identify visualization patterns and visualization parameters that can be used by both scientists and visualization artists. But because they think so binary, I think they miss what visualization artists can do with the data. So I think computer vision guys are another discipline that should be looked into by both scientists and visualization artists.
So the computer people, the art and design people, and the scientists working together.
I think we all need to start communicating better to one another, because I think just in the future we're going to be gathering more and more and more data. We're constantly gathering data. And I think it's going to be crucially important for us to communicate with one another in all the different disciplines, because each discipline has their own algorithm and their own way of processing the data and visualizing the data that the other may not have had. So there may be a better way that the computer vision scientist has come up with of processing the data, but the visualization artist has kind of his own little algorithm that brings out bits of the data that scientists may want to look at, but they just were like, oh, well, this produced this black and white image, but I want color. But the scientist is like, no, I can really see nice surfaces in there. I can see horizons that I want to pull out from that data. So I think it's going to be important in the future for all of us to kind of communicate with one another.
And I think from so highly specialized as fields are today, it seems like you have to have the three people talking together, or three groups talking together, rather than one person trying to do it all, because it is very specialized, I suppose, more and more so.
It is. And I think, I guess to kind of go back to Interstellar, it's the astrophysicist, Kip Thorne, he's a theoretical physicist, actually. He was kind of the lead scientist on the project. So when Christopher Nolan, the director, came to Kip Thorne and said, I would like you to help me with this. I want you to give me, you know, the science behind it to make sure I'm doing this as accurate as possible. I think that was really good, because you had a guy who has many years of experience and background in looking at this data and processing and visualizing it, and then talking hand in hand and one-on-one with the guys who were visualizing all this data. And so he was able to kind of reel them in and say, no, you can't spin it this way, because that's not accurate. It needs to really start to look like this. But then at the same time, he probably gave them some leeway to go with it, so they could really make the visualization stand out as its own scientific entity, as well as a piece of art in the film.
So we are expecting, when the Academy Awards come out, that Interstellar will get the award for special effects.
I would hope so, just because it was a beautiful rendition and rendering of what a black hole looks like, and also that it was scientifically accurate, and I think that was incredible. When I saw that film in the cinema, I was blown away with how stunning the visualization was, and I never envisioned a black hole to look like it did, and it was just a different way that it was visualized, but it was accurate, so it was really, really neat and exciting to see.
Now, most moviegoers won't know that. I wonder if the Academy will actually understand the complexity. I'm sure somebody out in Hollywood is doing that PR, I should say education, to let them know how important that is.
Right. I hope so. And I'm sorry to keep bringing up Interstellar. I just think it's a really good example of kind of what we're talking about with big data and visualizing. Kip Thorne wrote a book that came out the same time that the film did, and it was how Interstellar was made and the science behind it. And what Pipthorn does is he writes in there, in a very easy to read, kind of layman way, the physics behind the film. And so, again, this kind of brings in this real hard science into a piece of art that is a film, Interstellar, and makes it easier to digest for the people, say, the voters for the Academy Award, if you want to look at it that way.
Yes, yeah, so tell me a little bit about, you mentioned one of your colleagues is looking at North Sea data and what you're doing with LIDAR.
Yeah, so one of my PhD colleagues, she's just finishing now, she is looking at the North Sea, and she has what's called seismic data that is just a reflection of kind of bedding planes and surfaces in the subsurface below the North Sea. And she is kind of looking at what's happening geologically, like sea level rise and sea level fall. Third geologic time is what she's trying to look at. And there's a program that she uses that's called PaleoScan. And what this does is this runs all the way through her full data set, and it will pick key horizons that she may want to look at and try to interpret geologically. Currently, she has an 8-bit survey from the North Sea. And she's able to pull out really, really fantastic features, geologic features in the data set. But she also has this 32-bit data set that she hasn't even begun to look at. And I think she also has a 24-bit just below that. Already, with the 8-bit paleo scans that she's done of the area, she is about 800 gigabytes of data. She's just about filled a terabyte hard drive just with all this paleo scan data, and that's just 8-bit information. If she tried to run it, that 24-bit data set or even the 32-bit data set, I don't even know where she would even begin to store all that information. But the amount, the information and the features are there in the data. It's just, it depends how you process and analyze it, and the amount of detail that you want to pull out of it. So I think as if we look at Moore's Law, which is every 18 months, we will double the computing power that we currently have today with the amount of chipsets and stuff that we're doing. In fact, UT Dallas is just now offering a quantum computing course, which is pretty insane. So if we start to get into that, we can start to actually process this 24-bit data set, and we can start to see geologic features in it that no one has ever seen before. We just can't do it right now. We're at a really interesting precipice, I think, and that the big amounts of data we have, we're just beginning to skirt the edges of really analyzing that data set. So I think it's going to be a really exciting time within the next couple of decades.
And you had told me earlier that, the Hubble telescope has so much data that they haven't even begun to process. And I know in the Earth scope, there's so much data, these large projects that are coming along, it's going to get to be a bigger and bigger problem, I suppose.
It will be a bigger problem, bigger than it already is. We constantly have to rework our algorithms to process the data. Satellite data collects huge amounts of data and metadata that is stored somewhere and saying, we'll store this here because we'll get to it later. But we keep storing and storing and storing it. And what are we going to do with that data? We need to process it. We need to look at patterns in it. We need to try to visualize it in different ways so we can really truly understand what is inside the data than just what we wanted to find in the first place. So say if you look at a satellite that is trying to read Hawking radiation or something that comes out of a black hole, they're really processing the data to pull out the information that they want to visualize the Hawking particles and the radiation that comes out of the black hole. But at the same time, it's receiving all of this other information that we haven't even looked at. And it can be, kind of analogy would be that 8-bit paleo scan data in the North Sea. Using the 8-bits, you can only pull out big, obvious features. But the 24-bit data set would have smaller features that are just as geologically important. You just can't see them in the data quite yet. So I think it's important that we understand and realize that we have all this data sitting there, and we just have to find ways to look at it and visualize it.
Keeping our eyes on the scientific problems and potential, the computer capacity, hardware, and understanding, and having visualizing people, the design artists, help us make sense out of those patterns, I think is what we're saying. Before we finish, can you tell me the name of the woman who's working on the paleo scan?
Yeah, her name is Rachel Harding. She's at the University of Manchester, and she is just finishing her PhD in the next few months, I think. Yes, so she's been working on that data for part of her master's and then also her PhD. So she has a pretty good handle on what's really going on out there geologically. But I think just a couple months ago, she started doing this big paleo scan, and she was finding really, really cool geologic stuff in it. And then she was like, I wish I could process the 24-bit data, Brian, because I think the stuff in there would be fantastic to look at and to analyze.
I just didn't want her to remain one more anonymous woman in history of science.
Oh, yeah. No. So, yeah, Rachel Harding is her name.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Of course, yes.
Well, we're well into our time, so I think we need to wrap up, Brian.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, I'm more than happy to have a chat again.